Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Graff, and I have been appointed by this court to represent Petitioner Adrian Johnson in his appeal.
But could you keep your voice up? You're a little hard to hear.
Of course, Your Honor. Mr. Johnson was severely prejudiced and is now serving a sentence of natural life by his attorney's failure to file a meritorious motion to suppress evidence. Because that failure cannot be considered a sound tactical decision, Mr. Johnson's conviction and sentence should be vacated. There are three issues I would like to focus on this morning. First, Mr. Borsberry's decision not to file the motion to suppress was based on clear ignorance of applicable Fourth Amendment law. Second, there was no tactical justification for the decision, since filing the motion to suppress would not in any way damage Mr. Borsberry's proposed lack of knowledge defense. Third, it is incredible on its face to think that Mr. Johnson would give consent to search the car. However, even if he had given consent...
Oh, they're always doing that. Mm-hmm.
That consent was tainted
always
by...
Always doing that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The consent was...
They're either really giving consent or the judge is believing the police when they say he gave consent, right? It's extremely common. Extremely common.
It's... But Mr. Johnson denies that he...
It's incredible that he would consent to the incriminating search. Let me ask you, do we know anything about the circumstances in which this photograph was taken of the interior of the vehicle?
No, Your Honor.
When it was taken or by whom? Or
I believe it was taken by one of the officers, not one of the arresting officers, but I believe it was another...
Did they carry a camera with them, or did they take the picture back at the...
No, it was taken at the scene. The question in my mind is twofold. One, whether the door to the car was open or closed. So whether the picture was taken actually represents what Sergeant Edelman would have seen mm-hmm. as he approached the vehicle. And two, it's unclear from the record whether the marijuana had been moved and replaced. So it's unclear, from the record that... that the marijuana was in plain view and that those photographs actually represent what Sergeant Edelman saw. Secondly, even if those photographs do represent what Sergeant Edelman saw, if he saw that from the outside of the car at night, it's not immediately apparent from the photos that that is, in fact, marijuana, and therefore the plain view exception wouldn't apply based on what we see in those photographs.
I'd like to ask you this, please. Johnson's trial attorney indicated that Johnson gave contradictory stories and lied to him when asked whether he was the driver of the car. Is there any evidence as to what version the trial attorney determined to be truthful? Because if the attorney believed that he would perjure himself by declaring that he was the driver, wouldn't that indicate no expectation or and no basis for motion to suppress?
I lost you for part of the end of your question, Your Honor, but let me address the first part.
I'm sorry, you lost the end because I'm on the phone and people are trying to get through. What I said was if the lawyer believed that he was going to perjure himself mm-hmm. By saying he was the driver, wouldn't that indicate no expectation of privacy in the car?
No, Your Honor.
And no basis for a motion to suppress?
No, Your Honor, for two reasons. There is no evidence in the record anywhere of anyone else capable of driving the car being there. Mr. Johnson was the only driver of the vehicle, so it's unclear to me honestly, where Mr. Borsberry got that statement uh-huh. in his affidavit. So it's clear that Mr. Johnson did, in fact, have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the vehicle because he was the authorized driver of a borrowed vehicle. Therefore, the failure to file a motion to suppress wasn't a tactical decision.
He abandoned the bottle, right?
He set it down as he was.
So the police leaving. Could pick it up and, you know, look inside and everything because it was abandoned. Once they do that, so they know he's been driving, right? They know he's been driving, and he has this open bottle. What then happens to the car if they arrest him? They have to do something for the car?
Your Honor, I don't believe they do. I mean, first of all, if they arrest him for carrying the ordinance for which he received the citation, carrying an open container of alcohol on a public way, that doesn't entitle them to search the vehicle, first of all. But
they are allowed to arrest him, aren't they?
I mean, technically, under Supreme Court precedent, you can arrest someone for a non...
You can take them down to the station and book them. But then what happens to the car? It just sits there while he's being taken away?
I see no reason why not, Your Honor. I mean, it's just parked on the side of the street. There's no reason for them to tow the car to bring it in. There's no evidence of the crime in the car.
So it's critical... So your argument is it's critical that he... It's critical whether he gave consent. Is that it?
That is one of the main issues. Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any practical difference between a police officer asking someone to stop and answer a question, and a police officer asking someone to approach and answer a question?
I think in these circumstances there is, Your Honor. It's
Why?
Not as if Mr. Johnson were just walking along the street and then the police say, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" Now, here, Mr. Johnson was going back to his car. The police had been watching him for a while, long enough that Mr. Johnson was aware the police were watching him, and then asked him to approach them. To me, that is a clear seizure under Fourth Amendment precedent. Going back to the reasonableness of Mr. Borsberry's decision not to file the motion to suppress, I want to, again, address the Fourth Amendment standing issues. Mr. Borsberry was clearly unaware of and mistaken regarding Fourth Amendment standing issues. He believed that since Mr. Johnson was the driver of a borrowed vehicle, he did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that vehicle. However, under this court's precedent, the driver of a borrowed vehicle has standing to challenge a Fourth Amendment, challenge the search of that vehicle.
Excuse me.
Moreover, that decision, the decision not to file, can't be considered a tactical decision because the motion to suppress would not at all affect Mr. Borsberry's proposed trial of, or proposed strategy of lack of knowledge defense. Under the Simmons rule, a defendant can argue one set of facts for purposes of the motion to suppress and a second set of facts for purposes of trial. So there was no choice to be made between those two scenarios. So Mr. Borsberry's belief to the contrary is, again, a mistake of law. There was no valid consent here, again, because Mr. Johnson denies giving consent in his affidavit. His affidavit in support of this motion also indicates that not challenging the police assertion that he gave consent was part of Mr. Borsberry's trial strategy. And again, had he given consent, that consent was tainted by the illegal police activity. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning, Your Honor. Joe Hartzler for the United States. There are a number of issues that we could discuss, some of which are raised by the court, and I'll hope to be able to answer some.
And your argument that Borsberry could possibly have had a tactical reason not to file a motion to suppress, what could he possibly lose on that? What possible cost is there to him?
Well, one of the costs would be that he could possibly lose an acceptance of responsibility if his client took the stand and perjured himself. Should he be either convicted or decide after the suppression motion that he...
Well, that's pretty remote. What I find troublesome about your position is that if there had been a suppression hearing, he would have testified that he never gave, or he might testify, never gave consent to search the car. And that photograph is so, you know, such bad evidence. Who knows what it's showing and this and that. then the police would testify to the opposite. And the police would probably be believed, but maybe not, because, you know, police testimony invites a certain amount of skepticism. I can't believe he'd be accused of perjury on the basis of, you know, disagreement with the police. But he would have a chance. You know, the judge might say, yeah, you know, this is really dubious business. This photograph is kind of phony and so on. So, you know, we have some chance of winning the suppression hearing. And I don't see any real downside to his... to the lawyers requesting that. So, you know, it's one thing to where you have a judge's finding, maybe believes the police and so on, and that usually stands. But when there's no hearing, you're just speculating on what the outcome of the hearing would be. Maybe these police officers would not be credible witnesses.
Well, we're not speculating on whether or not the defendant consented to the search of the car. There was testimony at trial from all three of the officers. In fact, it was defense counsel himself that elicited the testimony because that was part of his defense about how cooperative he was. And note that that really was the defense strategy from the get-go of the trial, but also that was...
But was this a jury trial?
Yes.
Well, the jury might not care whether he consented or not. They might say, you're guilty. But a judge might, you know, say, yeah, I don't believe those police officers.
The problem, Mr. Hertzler, is that the notion that it was trial strategy to assert, a lack of knowledge defense at trial and forego a motion to suppress just doesn't make any sense, because the trial defense was available even if the motion to suppress was pursued. And the positions that were advanced in the motion to suppress, they couldn't adversely impact him at trial. And there's nothing inconsistent in taking the position that he had no knowledge of the drugs in the car, but in still asserting a right to not have the car searched. It's pretty clear that the strategic decision in this case was based on a misunderstanding of the law as to the right of a driver to assert a privacy interest in the car. I don't see how we could ever uphold it as a legitimate strategic choice.
Well, let's assume for a moment that it's not a legitimate strategic choice, just for the sake of argument. You know from the evidence at the trial that there is no question that these police officers reasonably suspected that he had an open bottle of beer.
No, that part of it is okay. Forget about that.
Well, then what I'm trying to do is to move on to the prejudice prong of the Strickland test. Let's move directly there.
No, I assume, and you can assume for argument's sake, that they could pick up the bottle because it was abandoned. They look inside. It's an open bottle, so there's a violation. The issue is whether they could search the car.
Well, once they had probable cause to arrest him, then he either consented to the search, and I'm suggesting that there's no reason to remand to hear his evidence because you have the testimony of all three officers.
Yes, but there's a difference between a jury determination of guilt and a judge's determination of consent. But anyway, what's your second point?
Well, my second point is really to stick with consent. You realize that this is what his position was from...
No, that's the first point. Look, I thought you were going to say somehow that because the bottle he was properly arrested for the bottle, they could search the car without his consent.
I don't think that's the case.
So consent is critical.
No.
No, yes? What are you talking about?
Well, they also had the plain view of the marijuana.
That photograph is such terrible evidence, really.
The photograph is not the best evidence, Your Honor.
It might be credited, but it might not. It's not strong evidence.
It's fairly strong evidence when a police officer says he shined the flashlight into the car and saw what he believed to be marijuana. I concede that the photograph is not the best evidence. Photograph typically is...
So forget the photograph. It's just the police officer saying what he saw. And we know, we have these cases where these police officers, they have the most remarkable night vision. They see tiny little objects from vast distances. Now, they usually get away with that. But it's far from certain. A judge occasionally says, no, I don't believe that. I don't believe you saw that. So that's why I'm asking whether there's any, whether you have any reason, is any basis for thinking the police could have searched the car if they didn't see the marijuana and if they didn't have consent.
Well, I don't know the circumstances, and I don't know the record reflects, but I think the car was still...
You don't know what the record reflects. Your record.
I don't know if the record reflects the position of the car and whether they would have towed it. If the police would have towed it, clearly...
Well, that's kind of critical. Yes, mm-hmm. If the police would have towed it, indeed, and they did an inventory search, then they find the marijuana. But you haven't argued that. It's not in your brief.
I don't know that the police would have towed the car because I don't know what position
so
it was.
So we assume the police would not have towed the car because there's no argument in your briefs that they would have towed the car.
I think I can't...
So we forget about towing the car, right?
Correct.
And that means that consent is the critical issue.
Well, if you dispute
or the site, you know, the flash, the photograph, or the testimony backed up by the photograph. I just want to make clear, or be certain, that there isn't some alternative theory as to, like the inventory search, as to how they would have discovered this stuff.
Or like a Gantt theory that they could have searched the car for more open alcohol. No, we did not present that theory. Yeah, it's either consent or plain view. And I think of the two, the consent is fairly strong because not only did the police officers unanimously say that they received...
I agree with you, it's fairly strong. But here the lawyer makes an incomprehensible decision. It has no strategic value whatsoever. It's an incomprehensible mistake which deprived his client of a shot at a ruling that would have been critically in his favor. And, you know, it's a shot. It's not a high probability event, but it was something that the lawyer kicked away for no reason whatsoever.
But you understand that as soon as Mr. Johnson was encountered and they found the drugs in the car, he said, my cousin must have left it there. He immediately had his whole consent defense prepared. So he was anticipating, would he be caught, what he would say. And I don't think it's fair to assume that that wasn't the same communication that was conveyed to his lawyer when they met. We don't know what was conveyed to his lawyer. All we know is that the lawyer adopted a consent defense strategy throughout. And once a client comes in and says, yeah, I consented to this thing, my defense is it's not my drugs. And you saw from his defense witnesses that his defense was, I did not put those drugs there. Those drugs were placed in that car, and I have nothing to do with them. So if he came into his defense counsel, Mr. Borsberry, and laid out that whole story, and I'm sure how exactly you can have him testify and take the witness stand and say, oh, no, I didn't consent to this search.
I don't understand you. We know they searched. Why can't he testify? They asked for my consent to search. I said no. They searched anyway. They said they found stuff, and I said, well, you know, that's I didn't put it there. Someone else put it there. Why is that inconsistent with what does that have to do with consent? I don't get that.
Because
why do you call that his consent defense?
Was the point that was made, I think, earlier today, and you say that they often consent. Well, they often consent because they believe that it shows that they're innocent. That's what the effort is. He already is prepared to say when they find these drugs, oh, I consented to the search. Why would he consent to the search? Because he wants to portray himself as innocent, not knowing that there are any drugs in the car. So your suggestion is that Mr. Borsberry could meet with him and somehow coach him into saying, well, I didn't consent. If they say I consented, I didn't consent. And, Your Honor, I think that's unfair to the relationship between this lawyer and this client. We do not know. Yes, the circumstances suggest that had you been representing Mr. Johnson, you might have filed a motion to suppress. The issue is whether or not Mr. Borsberry fell beneath the standard.
He can take two shots at it. He can testify in the suppression hearing that he didn't consent. And if he loses there, you know, then he tries something else at trial.
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable, however, for a defense counsel to take the case, accept the client's claim that he consented, presumably because he didn't believe that there was any contraband in the car, and adopt that strategy throughout. I concede there would be little risk. There was also little possibility of reward here. I mean, the police officers testified that there was consent, and he knew, presumably at the time, that they'd already observed the marijuana in the car. There was no chance, I didn't think, that he would be able to suppress it because it was tainted by an illegal seizure or arrest. So his calculation on those two points was accurate and reasonable. The only question is whether or not he should have moved to suppress so that his client could claim that he did not consent to a search, having already told the police that he would consent. I don't think that you can say that that's constitutional inadequate representation when the lawyer concludes, I'm not going to take that approach in this case.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you.
Yes. Ms. Graff, do you have anything further?
Just briefly, Your Honor, on the issue of consent, not only was consent given, or I'm sorry, not given, but even had consent been given, it was ineffective because it was tainted by the illegal police detention immediately preceding the alleged consent. So even if consent were given...
Tainted by what?
We do not agree. The original Terry stop was not supported by reasonable suspicion. And even if it was, the police exceeded the scope of the Terry stop when they ran the second warrant check and when they searched the area and took the initial time to search the area. And since the consent would have had to have been given during that time period, it would have been given during the it would not have been sufficiently attenuated from the illegal police activity and therefore would be invalid consent for Fourth Amendment purposes.
If he testified at the suppression hearing that I should know the answer, but I don't. If he testified at the suppression hearing that there was no consent, and then, in accordance with Mr. Hartzler's suggestion, testifies at trial that he did, that of course he consented because he hadn't put it there, can he be impeached with
Your Honor, I think
testimony at the suppression hearing?
If he testified at trial, that evidence can't be admitted against him at trial.
Understand you. Would you speak louder?
I'm sorry. First of all, Mr. Johnson did not testify at his...
No, I'm asking you a hypothetical question. If he testifies at the suppression hearing that he didn't consent and then gives inconsistent testimony at the trial, can his testimony at the suppression hearing be used to impeach his testimony at trial?
Your Honor, my understanding of the Simmons rule is that his trial attorney would make a motion to exclude that testimony and it would not come into the trial.
But if he testified at the suppression hearing, and let's assume he was convicted, that testimony could be used for purposes of the pre-sentence report and the district court could take that into account for purposes of sentencing. Right?
Your Honor, that's not an issue that...
I understand, but I'm just talking about the use of that testimony at the suppression hearing.
For the
trial court could take that into account, assuming there's a conviction. Then we move on to the sentencing. The trial court could take that into account, what was said at the suppression hearing, when the court is determining acceptance of responsibility.
But he got a life sentence, didn't he?
Yes, he was facing a mandatory life sentence.
So, yeah, it's hard to add to that punishment. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Graff. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
And we thank you and Mayor Brown for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Hartzler.